You're listening to Guy SA Radio, where you are family. Welcome to everybody, to our listeners, with the start of our new talk show called Let's Talk. This is a show where we're going to talk about various topics that influence and can influence our daily life. A warm welcome to the Let's Talk team, who consists of Dr. Ezio Baroli, specialist medical practitioner and medical sexologist, Christa Kutsia, myself, psychologist and psychosexologist, and then Charles Grief, specialized counselor with special interest in gay and lesbian relationships. To kickstart our talk show, we're going to talk today about PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis. And I can already hear and see all the question marks going to some of the people that have never heard what PrEP is all about. After today, you will have a much clearer idea and very valuable knowledge and information. So what is pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP? It's for people who do not have HIV, but who are at substantial risk of getting it to prevent HIV infection by taking medication every day. And for many gay, bi, MSM internationally, people using PrEP, it has become like taking their daily vitamins. Of course, PrEP should ideally be used in combination with other prevention methods, such as condoms and water-based lubrication, which have the added benefit of preventing sexually transmitted infections, or commonly known as STIs. Now, that's a mouthful. It sounds very technical. And to make it very practical, Dr. Baroli, can you please shed some light? What is PrEP?
Thank you, Christa, and welcome to your listeners. So PrEP isn't a thing. PrEP is a concept. It is pre-exposure prophylaxis. Pre meaning before, exposure we understand, prophylaxis is prevention. So we want to prevent something before we are exposed to it. And it's a little bit like if you're going to a malaria area, you will then take malaria prophylaxis, you will take medication, so you don't get malaria when you're there. This is exactly the same idea with HIV infection. So PrEP is a concept. It's not a tablet. It is not the name of a thing that you can get off the shelf. It is not a particular color tablet or anything like that. It's a concept. What happened is we were looking for ways of reducing the susceptibility to HIV infection. And what the science community did was said, okay, fine. We have these medications that we use for treatment. Can't we use them for prevention? And for prevention, we wanted medication that concentrates inside the genital tissues because we want the drug present right there where the virus is coming in. And so a number of drugs were looked at. Drugs were not, when I say drugs, I mean medication, I mean medicines. And the first two that are suitable are the ones that are in the current PrEP medication, but there will be others as research continues. So currently, PrEP consists of one tablet, which contains two different medications. If you look on the internet, if you look on the sites, you will actually find the trade name of that drug. We're not allowed to mention trade names in this country. However, the trade name is not what South Africans are likely to be getting for PrEP because we have a number of generic drugs. We have generic copies of these drugs. So what I suggest people do is read what's on the box and look at the ingredients.
What would the ingredients be? They have to look for?
Right. So they look for, there are two ingredients in there. One is called N-tricytabine, and the other one is tenofovir depoxival fumarate.
That's a mouthful.
They're mouthfuls. I agree. They are mouthfuls. We abbreviate that to FTC and TDF.
Will I be able, if I pick up the box or the container, will I be able to read those shortened versions of the name?
Not the shortened versions, no. They are what we use within the profession. But on the box, you will actually find the proper names. So it's N-tricytabine and tenofovir.
And will I be able to get that prescription from my medical doctor?
Yes.
So I can have peace of mind that I'm going to get the right thing.
You're going to get the right drugs, yes. Okay. Yeah, the right medication, yeah. Yeah. Provided that you qualify.
And how do I qualify?
Interestingly, initially it was people that are at high risk of getting HIV infection that were targeted first as target groups. But as we went along, and particularly in South Africa, given our very high HIV rate, anyone who has sex qualifies for PrEP. It's as simple as that. The incidence is so high, and the majority of the infections that we see currently are in the youth and in people that are in committed relationships. So monogamy is not a guarantee for non-spread of HIV, and we see it in our HIV figures in the country. So anyone who is having sex without a condom would qualify for the extra protection that PrEP offers.
So what you're actually saying is, if we're saying anyone, like in the introduction, we're talking about a lot of people with that are HIV positive or that are bisexual or homosexual or MSM internationally, that's actually not the only people we're talking about here. Does not matter what your sexual orientation is.
Correct.
If you're having sex, you should actually be considering that as one of the added precautions.
Precautions, yeah. So PrEP doesn't replace the condom. It is seen as an add-on to the condom. You will never find anyone advocating losing the condom if you're using PrEP, because PrEP doesn't protect you from other STDs or STIs, and it certainly doesn't protect against pregnancies. So in our environment, that's probably not too much of an issue, but in our heterosexual environment, where the biggest growth of HIV is at the moment in teenagers, that is definitely an issue. So we want to encourage people to still use condoms and use PrEP as an add-on protection. But anyone who has sex without a condom basically is putting themselves at risk in our country because the incidence is so high. In some of the other countries where it's very low, then the chances that you're going to meet another HIV positive person are much lower. So it might not be as big an issue as it is here in South Africa.
But is PrEP not, and maybe Sean, you can also come in here, is PrEP that is becoming so available, not giving people permission to have loose sex, if you can call it like that? To say to actually give you permission to have multiple sexual partners with no discretion. Are we not opening up here doors that some people feel should have remained closed?
That is one way of looking at it, and it is one of the comments that we often get. But logically speaking, you do exactly the same when you sell someone a condom, or particularly when you give someone a condom for free. So these interventions have got nothing to do with morality. The virus doesn't know morality. The virus just looks for a place to live. So what we are doing is we are giving people the tools that they need to protect themselves against the virus. How and where they use that and in what context they use it, that's their problem. But we are not giving anyone license to do anything that they wouldn't be doing anyway. So one of the concerns that has arisen is that where PrEP has been used in Europe, for instance, for quite a while, have we seen an increase in STDs and have we seen an increase in so-called promiscuity? So the data shows that initially there is a slight increase in sexual partners when taking PrEP, and that stabilizes over the first 12 months. It stabilizes down back to original levels. There hasn't been an increase in France, at any rate, on the papers I read from France, in the number of STDs. So a little bit of a bump initially, and then it settles down. I think it's when the novelty factor wears off, quite frankly. And we also need to understand and keep in mind that if people are using PrEP and are not using a condom, chances are they weren't using a condom before either. And for that population, it certainly is a protection that they didn't have before.
Yeah.
So I think people are easily asking the questions, you know, if they will not be... people be more reckless, if I can put it like that, when it comes to sexual partners and so on. But I think we always look at the negative aspects when thinking about these things, because these kind of questions, people don't do that. We're always expecting the negative, that people's behavior will become negative. But I mean, go and look in any research that has been done. All the things you're actually fearful, never realize.
Don't happen.
So we speculate a lot of things, but if you look, it's like Dr. Baralis mentioned earlier, it's here to protect the people. And that is a way that the normal guy on the street would rather look at it. They don't think that we will be more reckless or have more sexual partners or anything like that. Or one big aspect that I got in a lot of social media these days is that they think they will, it will lead the increase in open relationships. And these kind of things have nothing to do with it. I mean, that is purely ethical values and standards that you decided earlier in your life. And what kind of medication comes on the market or what the situation is doesn't really have an effect on you. It's choices you make.
Correct. It's a little bit like blaming the internet for everything.
Exactly. Okay?
It's a tool. How you use it is entirely up to you.
I think something that is quite important that comes to mind for me is many years ago, when parents were asked to start talking to their children about a contraception, a lot of the anxiety came from parents to say is, but what if I have this conversation with them? Isn't it like me giving them permission to go out and have sex? And we have realized over the years is that younger and younger generations are becoming curious and becoming sexually active. So sending a child or a young person to war without the necessary tools is far more dangerous and it's far more irresponsible.
Correct.
Whether you talk to them about it or not, whether the things are there to protect them or not, they are going to go and be curious and they're going to experiment. So what I am hearing and taking from this is it is important for us to be realistic. Life happens. The emotional, psychological, and the support factors, yes, everybody needs to deal with that. But this is a medical intervention that's been brought to actually protect people from people and from themselves. So I think this is becoming quite a lovely and interesting conversation, but I think we need to take a break. We're going to listen to some music, and you're listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family, and we'll be back shortly.
Hello, darlings. This is your Queen of the Skies, Kathy Specific here. For the first time in history, an all-gay vacation hits the shores of Africa. Proudly brought to you by AfriGay. Join myself and the seductively saucy trolley dollies as we take you to the beautiful island of Mauritius to experience magnificent sun, sea, and surf, a few decadent parties, and the chance to make fabulous friends from all over the world. This unique event will be hosted by South Africa's aviation goddesses and your tantalizingly tempting poster girls for travel. For more information, buckle up, bitches, and book your spot at Gay SA Radio.
Welcome, welcome. You're listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family. You're actually tuning into Let's Talk, so let's talk. This is the show where we talk about things that matter in our lives, topics that influence us and influence our daily lives. And we're touching up on one of our previous conversations with PrEP, the pre-exposure prophylaxis intervention, if we can call it that, where Dr. Baraldi gave us a lot of insight on what is happening. And that is for the people that missed out on our previous conversations. It's specifically aiming at people who do not have HIV, but who are substantially at risk getting HIV. So the intervention that comes in medication to assist us to actually have sex, have pleasure, but actually reducing the risk of getting HIV. So there's a lot of research that's been done. And the people part of the panel today is Dr. Ezio Baraldi, our specialist medical practitioner and medical sexologist, Chris Lapitsia, myself, psychologist and psychosexologist, and Charles Grieff, our specialized counselor with special interest in gay and lesbian relationships. So we're going to continue our conversation with PrEP to discuss, because there are so many still questions that we haven't answered and discussed in our previous conversation. So Dr. Baraldi, if you could lead us a little bit into that, we've discussed what it is, the medications, where we can get that, all of that in the previous conversation. The questions that we didn't cover is one of the things is to say, how do I take PrEP? When do I take it?
Right. Thank you, Krista. So PrEP has been registered. The intervention is registered for everyday use. That is where the research was done. So if you take the medication every day, What we want, remember from the previous talk, is we want enough levels of the medication in the actual genital tissues. We want the drug to be present at the front door where the virus is going to be coming in. And the data shows that in men, that takes 7 days. In women, it can take up to 28 days.
Us women are always a bit
always, complex. Always complicated, yeah.
We keep you on your toes.
That's it. And the reason for that is that both the rectum and the penis have got a much higher blood supply than the vagina. So the drug is delivered much more effectively to those areas. So the guidelines are saying to us, you take your medication every day and you are covered after 7 days.
Is it before meals, after meals?
You can take it at any time that you like. It's not related to meals. In terms of side effects, potential side effects of the medication, tenofovir basically has got no side effects. Intracytabine, so the two drugs you remember that are in the medication, intracytabine, when you start taking it, can cause a little bit of stomach nausea, a little bit of upset. Very, very seldom leads to vomiting itself, but it can cause a bit of nausea, which goes away after a while as the body gets used to it. So we take it every day. If you miss a pill, it's not the end of the world, okay? Because very soon after we registered the intervention for everyday use, people started asking questions, and particularly in France, started asking the question, but I don't have sex every day.
Mm-hmm.
I might have sex once a month, once every 2 weeks. I might not have the opportunity to have sex every day. Do I still have to take these pills every day?
Yeah.
And so the EPIGAY study was started in France, where they looked at taking PrEP on demand.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take it when I need it. If I'm going to do that, then how do I take it?
Mm-hmm.
How many pills, when, what, why? And they looked at a variety of different mixes and matches. And they came, the results that came out was that the 2-1-1 intervention, I'll explain it in a minute, is the one that is effective. So the 2-1-1 intervention is as follows: 2 tablets, 2 to 24 hours before your event, 1 tablet the day after, 1 tablet the day after that. If that event A happened, in fact, and if it was risky, because not all events are risky. So if they didn't happen, you don't take the last 2 tablets. If it wasn't risky, you don't take the last 2 tablets either. But if it was, then it's 2 tablets, 2 to 24 hours before the event, 1 the day after, 1 the day after that. Now, the reason for that is that it takes up to 2 hours to get minimum levels of drug into the tissues. Now, I would certainly not recommend people do that, because 2 tablets, if you're not used to taking them, will make you nauseous and will spoil your party.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. But if you know you're going out on a Friday evening, then take one in the morning, take one at 6 o'clock in the evening, and then you go out for your evening. You've taken your 2 tablets 2 to 24 hours before the event. Okay? And what did they find with this event, with this kind of intervention? It is as good as taking it every day. In fact, they found that if you take 4 tablets a week, it's good enough.
Okay.
We can't promote it fully. At the moment, it's not in our guidelines yet. Okay. So, but this is something that people will read on the internet. But it is good. There is new data, new long-term data now that's come out from the Amsterdam study, where they looked at PrEP on demand for 2 years in a large group of people, and there wasn't a single HIV infection in that group. So it seems to be very effective. And it makes sense in terms of using it when you need it.
It's actually quite, I think, liberating for a lot of people, because I think the fear that people have usually when they take medication, and maybe I've skipped once, or I skipped one, it takes a little bit of that fear away that I'm, mm-hmm. I can still be protected. So there's some kind of a level of control, mm-hmm. that I have to say is I can plan, And these are certain guidelines to plan. So you don't have to be caught off guard. And I think that sounds quite promising. And I don't want to go off topic here, but I think there's just a little bit of clarity for people that have heard the word risky sex. Maybe we just need to just have a short bit of information of what would be considered risky sex.
Right, so risky sex is any sex that is not safe sex, which says absolutely nothing to you. But that is exactly the kind of answers you're going to get. So if you're not practicing safe sex, it's risky. So what is safe sex?
Absolutely. Right?
And the bottom line is there mustn't be any mixing of body fluids. That's really where the issue is, because the virus is carried in the body fluids. Now, sex is a very messy subject, and it's a wet subject. There's a lot of fluids going around.
Absolutely.
And it's very difficult to control. The one way that you control fluids is with plastic. So we talk about the condom.
Yes.
But there's oral sex that where body fluids can be mixed. There's a variety of ways where body fluids can be mixed. So technically, the only safe sex is sex that doesn't involve contact with the other person, or minimal contact. So mutual masturbation, for instance, could be considered safe sex. There's no mixing of body fluids. Okay. Internet sex, absolutely safe.
And you won't need prep for that.
And you won't need prep for that, no. But you do need a good line, a good data line. But for everything else, it is technically risky. Some things are more risky than others, of course. So if we're going and to have sex after consuming a lot of alcohol, for instance, your judgment is seriously impaired, and then you will do things that you would never do when not under the influence of alcohol. And the same goes for chemsex. So, of course, chemsex is a big issue these days, and something we can discuss at some stage. But chemsex basically revolves around being high for a very long period of time. It's basically 3-4 days at a time, on drugs that make you very horny. And the activity that then takes place is long and prolonged, and there is really very little concern in terms of safety because you're high. So that is a very, very high-risk situation.
So technically what we're saying is one should, if you want to take control and you want to be safe, consider the probability, highly likelihood, that if you're going to engage in a sexual encounter, that risky sex is going to somewhere along the way likely be part of it.
Correct.
So consider that as the guideline.
Yeah.
To say is the likelihood that there's going to be body fluids exchanged at some stage is high, so high. That equals risky sex.
Risky sex, correct, yes. Yes.
Okay, I think we're on a nice roll here. We're going to just take a short break and just quickly listen to some music, and we'll be back. You're listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family.
You can follow Gay SA Radio on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Gay SA Radio, where you are family.
Welcome, welcome. You're listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family. We continue our lovely conversation. You actually tuning in to Let's Talk. So, Let's Talk.
Ek sal nie geweet of dit 'n bietjie uit pas uit sou gewees het nie. Hoe effektief is PrEP tydens chemical sex? Is dit nog steeds effektief? Of gaan voor die chemical sex dit meer risky maak? Weet, gaan die chemiese aspekte met mekaar inmeng? Laat dit begin.
I don't think that research has been done, quite frankly, because we haven't had people on chemsex and we give them PrEP and we do blood levels and all of that.
Okay, okay.
But technically speaking, it should be equally effective. The problem is, if you're going for an all weekend chemsex, you take your two pills before you start on a Friday night, the next day and the day after that, you're so high you might forget your pill.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Okay. And remember, if you're having risky sex on a Friday night, then the Saturday you must take a pill, and the Sunday you must take a pill, the next day and the day after that.
Okay.
But if you're having sex on a Friday night, it's risky, and Saturday morning, and Saturday afternoon, dan begin die dag, jy tel.
Yes.
So you're going the whole weekend, and you must carry on with Monday and Tuesday as well.
Yeah.
And take a pill every day, and 2 days after the exposure. So, they reckon if you have more than sex twice a week, then it's 8 tablets a week. Twice a week, 4 tablets, 8. Then you might as well take one every day.
Yeah, exactly.
And get it done. So for people that are doing Chem-6, my advice would be just take it every day.
Yeah,
that's quite valuable information. And so ultimately, if you're now going back to the point of the question to say is when do we take it and how much control do I want to actually take or preventing my exposure? And then, you know, if you're going to have intermittent or on a fairly regular basis sexual encounters, you know, take it every day and then, you know, you're covered.
Get it done with, yeah. You know, you're covered. And
it's part of your regime. Issues.
Yeah, yeah. It's like taking your vitamins every day.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, yeah. But I wanted to ask Charles, what, in your experience, look, PrEP has been around for a while now, particularly in the MSM community because it is available from the NGOs. And there's been a lot of, in the past, shaming on PrEP. So we've seen when it first came out in the States, we saw the T-shirts saying PrEP slut and all sorts of other negative shaming connotations because of what we spoke about the last time, that if you're taking PrEP, you must be promiscuous, whatever the hell that means. But what has the effect been in terms of relationships on people having PrEP? What happens in a situation where you are in a relationship, but you're not entirely sure whether it's monogamous or not, and you decide to go on to PrEP just to protect yourself, which is your right. How has this PrEP affected the dynamics of relationships, in your experience?
Well, out of my personal experience is that they didn't really have any effect on the type of relationships. That it stays exactly the same. It's not that more people go into an open relationship than there was before. The big thing is, I think it only helped them take more responsibility and be more responsible for their action. But at the same time, now a lot of people will say, yes, but isn't my partner now playing around with other people more at this stage? I mean, if something like that happened, they did it before PrEP were there.
Correct.
Yeah. So I don't think we must go and look for PrEP as an excuse of the possibility that people will be more irresponsible and have more sexual partners than before.
So if your partner was playing around before, in any case, now he's got less of a chance of bringing up something that you didn't want.
Exactly.
That's what you want.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't think there are any really credit in that statement, and people can forget about that fear, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's something they don't have to fear about.
In fact, if we think about what you just said, if a partner who plays around and goes on PrEP, then it protects me as well.
Exactly.
Because he's not bringing something home that we don't want.
Yeah. So technically, he's actually more responsible.
More responsible than he ever was before.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Just to the psychological effects that might come from this.
You know, the interesting thing people often ask me, and especially if we talk about infidelity and the impact on relationships, and they often say to me is, okay, now how do I prevent this from happening again? And the only safeguard that you have in your relationship that infidelity is not going to creep in or some sneaking around is not going to happen is to make sure that what you get at home is actually so much that you don't want to risk losing that.
Mm.
So PrEP can very easily become the culprit or the one that we're going to blame. But in actual fact, there's something in the relationship that needs to be addressed. So while we're addressing the psychological aspects of the relationship and the dynamic, we need you and your partner to be protected. So what? Because often, as we know, psychological and emotional things happen take a lot longer to resolve the dynamics. And in the meantime, people are being exposed and people are at risk.
Mm.
So we need to, and this it comes back to the same thing to say is when somebody comes to me and they are suffering from depression, am I going to wait until they feel better before I actually introduce a medication to assist them with the depression?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I going to do the two things at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
So why would I not introduce a preventative interaction or intervention while we are working on the relationship dynamics?
Mm-hmm.
So the two things shouldn't actually be running separate. It's not, the one is not removed from the other. The interesting thing, and I've had a couple of people and the positive feedback that I've had with people that started PrEP. And the one was, one of the people said that PrEP has replaced fear as the central focus of relationships. So they've actually realized is there's some freedom in this. Not in the sense that I'm freeing up my partner to go and explore other avenues, or I can go and explore other avenues, but I don't have to be at fear all the time of contracting it. Mm. Especially if one of the, we're talking about discordant couples, of whether one is HIV positive and the other one is not.
Mm.
So we need to actually replace that fear and bring some joy back in this relationship. So we have to be very careful to be too judgmental and narrow-minded when we look at medical interventions and start saying, you should have more control and you should have more trust in your relationship. Yes, all of those things are important, but we also need to be realistic. We're also living in a country, and I think that is one of the realities that we have to face, is where rape is unfortunately very rife. So even if you are in a monogamous relationship where there's complete trust and there is no other parties, the possibility of being exposed to the HIV virus is there, even if it is not through your own doing.
It's one of the realities of the world we're living in. Interesting you mentioned serial discordant couples. Because a serial discordant couple where one is positive and one's negative is the ideal place to use PrEP.
Mm. Absolutely.
Or is it?
Mm.
And that's the question that's often asked, because of the new information that's come in, that undetectable is untransmissible.
Okay.
So if I am positive and I'm on treatment and my viral load is undetectable and has been undetectable for 6 months and longer, then the amount of virus that I have in my body is too little to pass on to the next person.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't give what you haven't got. Simple as that. And if you're suppressed for 6 months and longer, then the data shows very clearly that you just don't have enough virus in your genital secretions to pass it on to the next person. So in a way, there are people, particularly the funders, who are saying, but you're a serodiscordant couple. The one is on treatment and is undetectable. Therefore, the other one doesn't need PrEP. And it's one of the excuses that have been used for not spending the money on the medication. In practice, it is still one of the focus areas, because U equals U makes sense on an epidemiological basis. So if we're looking at the size of the epidemic, the more people we treat, the less people there are to spread the virus out, okay? Because they can't. That's fine. So that's what we're chasing. It's the 90-90-90 goals that everyone has heard of. On an individual basis, I could be HIV positive and taking my medication and being suppressed, biologically suppressed or undetectable for 6 months. But now I get a stomach bug and I get a diarrhea and I have that for 4 days. In those 4 days, I've taken my medication, but it's gone right through and I haven't absorbed it. Chances are my virus is going to go up because the amount of medicine's gone down. Or I've got a flu or waiting for an op or anything else that just rocked the boat. So technically speaking, the only time that you can say you are undetectable is on the day that the test was done. Because after that, things can happen in between.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like when you do an HIV test, the only time you can say that you're negative is on the day that the test was done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in your serodiscordant couples, irrespective of what the accountants and the funders want us to believe, it is still a place where PrEP is useful, because if you PrEP, then you take away that risk of I'm not undetectable today. And it should be applied there.
I think thank you for that clarity. That's quite valuable to know. And I think for people to bear in mind. A last very technical question or practical question that I would want to know to say is, if I feel I want to take PrEP, and I have got the medical funds on my side, can I go to my GP and say, please prescribe this. So the criteria that we spoke about in the previous discussion that we had, to say in terms of if we talk about government funding and medication, does that fall away? Do I have a choice to say, I would like to take this, can you prescribe?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you can afford the intervention, you have every right to it. You should, technically speaking, be able to go to any GP and be able to get the medication. Unfortunately, we have a situation where a number of the colleagues are not up to date with this intervention. It hasn't been properly publicized. I mean, if you have a look in the MSM community, we all know about it because there's been a noise and there's information around it. In the heterosexual community, there hasn't been. It's dead still.
Yeah.
Because government doesn't, or the funders don't want to wake up a demand for the stuff. And the same thing has happened with some of the practitioners. So some of the practitioners are hesitant to prescribe it. They're not quite sure what the protocols are. They're not quite sure who qualifies for it. And one of the problems that often comes up when I'm talking or teaching GPs about PrEP is the question of, but what about resistance?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're only giving two drugs. You've drummed into my head that we have to have three drugs for HIV, and now you want me to prescribe only two drugs. What about this resistance?
Mm.
Well, the point is, there's no virus in the HIV-negative person, therefore there's nothing that can become resistant. Okay? So there is confusion within the medical fraternity as well, and you may well, unfortunately, come across an encounter with a practitioner who's not well informed and who says to you, I don't know what you want, and I'm not only prescribing this because the rules are three drugs and all you need shall be positive in any case. Why are you lying to me? So it's not going to be a uniform service everywhere. That doesn't mean that people shouldn't go looking for the service, okay, and creating a demand for the service to be provided and for the practitioners to be to date on it.
Wonderful. Charles, something for to
wrap
up with?
Yeah, just one thing that you've mentioned, Derek, but all that was actually shocking for me a while ago, is that there were specialists who wasn't aware what PrEP is. And that was really shocking for me because, I mean, for according to me, every GP should actually know about it, never mind specialists in specific fields. And when I mentioned for them about PrEP, they said, listen, are the person HIV positive?
They're getting confused. You see, the problem, part of the problem, and there are many issues that combine this, but in the first world, anyone who has an interest in HIV will treat it.
Yes.
So if you're a gynecologist and I have an interest, I'll treat it. If I'm a neurosurgeon and I have an interest, I'll read it up, I update myself, and I treat it. In South Africa, because of the size of the epidemic, we can't afford that. We can't afford to say, here's a bloke and there's a bloke, but these blokes don't do it. Okay?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, here, every single GP needs to treat it just because of the size of the epidemic. But within that group, there are still differences in knowledge levels and interests.
Yes.
So unfortunately, you are going to come across those. Yeah?
Okay.
Wonderful. It's your something for the road.
If you're having sex, take PrEP. That's it.
I will absolutely second that. I want to close up with one of a comment with that at the interview of somebody that was taking PrEP and said, for the first time in my life, since I started taking it, I actually have had sex as I like it, without having the horrible feeling of, oh my word, afterwards. We have the right to protect ourselves. We have the responsibility to be as risk-free as possible. And we have the absolute privilege of being alive and to enjoy it. So go out and be safe.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Thanks.